Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Eason, here with life coach Dean McMurray, and this is your daily dose of happy. We're very happy you decided to join us today. We're very happy to be able to do anything because just before we came on the show, all of our technology just went kaflooey. Right. It was just bizarre.
That it wasn't going to play today, evidently.
Yeah, really strange. I mean, the microphone went away and then it came back. The volume was really low. We brought it way up high and then it disappeared entirely. Like, what on earth is going on here? Oh my goodness. Did Texas send us like the crazy weather or something?
I don't know. We're on something. Something's going on, right?
Wow. Yeah.
I'm not sure. What's going on.
Oh, crazy. Okay. Well, just get started anyway.
It's a great reminder, Walt, that sometimes we just got to take a brief stop, a stop and breathe and then, continue forward, right?
It's also a reminder that, you can easily get frustrated and upset by what goes on. That was a terrific opportunity to get upset. We didn't. We just laughed at it. Like, what the heck?
What's going on? Yeah. Like, kind of scratching her head going, oh man, I was like, oh, what's going on with the unplugging stuff, plugging it back in? Yeah.
Right.
That was fun.
Goodness. That was crazy. Well, maybe it has something to do with the disclaimer that I have to give because, first of all, we had a really cool email from when you joined me on Friday and sitting in for Linda Armstrong that I'm going to be sharing in a moment. But we also had an interesting conversation. Amy Blackford and I had an interesting conversation yesterday in which she brought up a show on Netflix. Maybe I don't know if you're aware of it. I wasn't aware of it. It's called Surviving Death.
I haven't watched
Your Death Experiences. You haven't seen it? Yeah. And the first episode is phenomenal. It's really, really good. The following episodes, they should just throw in the trash and start over. But the first episode was great. So watch the first one and then hold your nose for the rest of it. And in fact, Amy and I are going to talk about it in greater detail. By the way, Amy asked me to let everybody know she apologizes for having recommended the whole series after she'd only seen one episode. She says, next time I will watch the whole thing before I make a complete recommendation. It's understandable. The first episode was really cool. It was really, really well done. And then after that, like the second or third episodes were about mediumship, but they barely touched on anything that you and I would consider recognizable mediumship. They distinguish between two types, which you probably already know, mental mediumship and physical mediumship.
Sure.
And they spent a lot of time on the physical mediumship, and the physical mediumship just got plain bizarre. I didn't feel like I walked away from watching that second episode feeling like I learned anything really useful. It was more like, let's see how spooky we can make everything.
Come on,
I don't have time for this. And then that was the first of two-parter on mediumship. The second part, we watched like 5 minutes with Louise and I, and we said, okay, we're done with this. Like, just turn this thing off. It's just not worth it. And they spent maybe 3 minutes on what you do, which I think is a much more interesting kind of thing, but they limited it. And you can tell me if this is normal or not. But they limited it entirely to mediums connecting people with the dead. Is that the limit of mediumship? Because I thought it went further than that.
Well, I guess in a nutshell, if you're really going with the book answer, which just really limits us all, right? But when you're going with the book answer, Walt, really that is the book answer of what a medium is.
Okay.
A medium in the truest sense is one who is able to connect with and communicate, back and forth with those that are deceased. So somebody that communes with the dead and, and however they do that. But, in the truest sense, and there's a lot of different, takes on, what type of mediumship is acceptable, like maybe the old more classic British school trained medium that's there's some of those from some of the institution famed institutions over there which are awesome. And the same as, you know, there's little different nuances with each medium. So everybody does mediumship a bit different, but in the end of the day, that's what a medium does. And now, are there some nuances to it? And really, when you start communicating with those that are deceased, does it start getting, how do I say, into the weeds? Absolutely, because it opens up doors that you never knew were there. And, you know, so they may not advertise that, or maybe they do. That's up to the individual. But, you know, it's, you're starting to communicate with other entities or energies or, you know, it's there. So, you know,
maybe what I was reacting to was the feeling that I was watching, you know, Teresa Caputo or Jonathan Edward from the very beginning, when for the very first time we're hearing about this and people are amazed and stunned by the whole thing, because that's the way they were presenting this one. And I mean, here in America, at least, there's been enough of those two plus others on television that I think people are kind of aware of, you know, okay, yeah, that happens. They've either decided for themselves that I believe in it or I don't believe in it, but it's not like it's a big shock anymore, is it?
Right, right. Yep. Yeah.
And yet that's the way, this is a brand new series. It started in December and they're treating it like this. It's this great big shock. I'm thinking, where have these people been? I don't understand this.
Well, you know, they probably, you know, and I can't speak for the director or, you know, what their creative vision was, you know, trying to go for, but sometimes some folks want to capture the essence of that, the emotional reactions, right?
And that would have been cool, actually. Right. That would have been very, if they had done that, I would have felt better about the episodes.
But instead of like almost, and sometimes it can come across staged or very, you know, and, but if, you know, if they're talking,
it wasn't even that. You know what they were doing? They were repeating in various ways in their presentation, we're not trying to convince anybody that this is happening. And then they spent the rest of the episode trying to convince you that it was happening. Wait a minute, guys, you know,
right.
Just stick to your own point. Okay.
Right. Well, you know, I think there's kind of a double-edged sword there, and you kind of touched on it, Walt, is that, you know, galleries really, in the sense you think of John Edwards or Teresa Caputo, whoever does galleries, I've even done them. Public galleries are a demonstration. Some call them a mediumship demonstration. But you're demonstrating your abilities to people in public, whether it's paid, free, doesn't matter. But you're demonstrating your ability to connect to spirit. And so it is a demonstration of your abilities. And kind of in a sense, you know, I guess it's really the individual's intent. But, you know, if somebody's trying to prove a point, they'll kind of get up on their soapbox to a degree and say, this is the way it is, right? Or, you know, why you should believe or think this way. Instead of just presenting, saying, well, if you don't believe it, that's fine, but this is what I'm getting. You know, if you have a life-changing moment, beautiful. If you don't, you know, that's okay too. But
it's
yeah,
great when they present those life-changing moments, that's fun. That's interesting. That's entertaining. Right. And it's also educational. That, I mean, that's actually, I think, what made those programs we referenced, you know, Teresa Caputo, the Long Island Medium, and John Edwards. And there's that kid from, Hollywood. I can't think what his name is. And there are a bunch of these guys.
Tyler.
Yeah. That's the one. Yep. Yeah. And the stories that are told there are literally stories where the people who are being read react with, wow, how on earth did he know that? I mean, that's something right. I told my mom 5 minutes before you arrived. No, that kind of thing.
Right.
You know? In this case, the big reveal was the guy who was this massive skeptic who said, okay, I'm going to know that it's true if at some point during the presentation, the medium says the word hair. I think, really? This is your big test. And then he finishes up and says, yeah, but the skeptical mind can also realize there's lots of ways to do that with too. I said, well, you should have known that the first place. This is not a difficult test. You know, right. I mean, come on.
Well,
I was telling Louise after the show, I said, you know, if it were me and I really wanted to test this kind of thing, the way I would test it is I would come up with like three completely disconnected words, like curtain, lemon, and Jehovah. And I'd write them on a piece of paper and put them on, in my wallet and see if the psychic can say all three of those things. And if they can say all three, that's pretty cool. Right. I mean, that would be really, really, you know, difficult to reproduce.
Right. No, absolutely.
But hair? I mean, really? Right. So I just, you know, I throw up my hands at some point.
Right. Yeah. I guess whatever works for them. But I do know that there's more to everything that we see on TV. There's so much that falls on the editing room floor, and they can,
yeah, there's that too.
You know, and I know from experience that they can take the same scene and edit it and make it say two completely different things without them actually changing somebody's words. Hmm. But it's just by the camera angle and the way they pan, adding a little music. And, you know, it's just completely mind blowing because, you know, when I was involved in a little project, I was like, I didn't know they could do that. Like, mm-hmm. And that really just kind of tells you, like, a lot of stuff, you know, you don't know how much is edited, and not saying that it's BS or whatever, but, you know, it's, they want you to get a certain feel from it or whatever their creative vision is. And, you know, they're going to, or whatever that network executive, this is what we want to see. You know, this is the kind of vibe we're going for this episode or whatever, right? And it's so, you know, they're playing to ratings, they're playing to the entertainment value. At the same time, you got to think how many times is that video going to be played or viewed? So, you know, because at the end of the day, it's for them, it's a business, right? And they're not,
I guess so, but I mean, yeah. I guess this gives new meaning to the term lowest common denominator, because instead of raising the bar, they lowered it.
Right. Well, and it's kind of sad too, because I'm sure, because I can't, number one, I haven't seen is it a documentary or is it a?
It's kind of documentary style. Yeah.
Okay. Like a docu-series.
It's docu-series. It's supposed to also be presented from a more scientific perspective. They have people who are, you know, from the scientific community involved in it. The first episode was really cool in that way, in that they had people who are doing long-term longitudinal studies from a science perspective. They had one person who had a near-death experience that actually lasted 30 minutes. She was clinically dead in every way.
Wow.
She was like a neurosurgeon. And she was describing how it completely changed her view, because her view used to be pure medical science. Like, you know, life ends when you stop breathing and the heart stops moving, the brain stops functioning.
Yep.
And now she had a completely different perspective on it. So that was cool. That was really interesting. You know, kind of, you know, pushing the limits of understanding and so forth.
Right.
But this other stuff just like, you know, oh, come on, it doesn't even belong in the same series. It really did. It was such a disconnect. And plus, there was a big thing that I really, really noticed that we talk about a lot here on the podcast that was missing. And if you've ever been to a spiritualist church, I don't know if you ever have. I've been to one time. And they're interesting enough. I mean, basically, it's getting a bunch of readings in a, quote, church, unquote, environment. It's not really a church in the sense of a Christian church. It's more, you know, it's a spiritualist church. It derived from the early explorations of the occult and spirituality and so forth, dating back to the 19th and early 20th centuries. And, you know, so they're kind of interesting. And one of the things that they focus on whenever you go to one of those meetings is they'll start off by getting everybody to sing or jump up and down and get excited, bring the vibe up, right? Which we talk about all the time, getting into alignment, getting that high vibe feeling, because that's when you're going to get the best results when you're trying to attract something. It's when psychics are going to be able to get better connections. You as a medium, I imagine, get a better connection when you're able to get into that higher vibe space. So, you know, that made sense. And they presented it that way. They said, this is why we do that. And then the rest of the series, it's like they forgot that they had even said that. After that, it was all, is there a voice there? Oh my God, I hear a voice. Like, what? Where did the high vibe go? It just kind of fell off the table. It was bizarre. It's like they weren't even paying attention to what they were telling you. You know?
Right.
I don't quite get it. Where's the producer's head at? What's his deal there? What's he trying to accomplish?
I don't know. And, you know, maybe it was going back to the sensationalism of some of these paranormal shows that are, you know, more focused on the scare factor or the fear factor, so to speak, of, you know, and trying to, you know, get people more like, oh my God, I can't believe, you know, aspect of that. And
I mean, the point where we turned it off on the second part of there was the main first episode, which was great. And the next two episodes were a pair on mediumship. And the beginning of the second part is where Louise and I cut it off. We cut it off at the point where this woman went to a house somewhere in New York, I think, that is known to be very haunted. Lots of you know, sightings and all that kind of stuff. And there's a caretaker there. She met with the caretaker, and she had all this electronic equipment so she could do recording. Apparently, one of the ways that people have tried to record spirits and energies and so forth is using electronic devices. They don't actually hear it when it's recording, but if they play it back, all of a sudden they hear something that they didn't hear before. Okay, so, you know, that's an interesting enough method. So they started to do that in this house. And apparently this house had been visited in colonial times by Thomas Jefferson and George Washington, Aaron Burr, and, you know, other characters like that.
Sure.
And so they go through this exercise, and they have all their equipment set up and so forth. And then they go into a room, and I think it was actually the bathroom, which kind of was appropriate. But they... But they sit down and say, okay, is there anybody there? I mean, it's like, it was so farcical. There was no energy raising at all. Is there anybody in the room? And they're recording, and then they play it back, and they hear these tap, tap sounds. You can hear footsteps. Wait a minute. What happened to the really cool? This is the big reveal. I mean, seriously, what the heck's going on here? You're showing me footstep sounds. They weren't even good footstep sounds on a recording device that you didn't hear the first time around. Am I supposed to be impressed by that? Is that like supposed to, you know, make me say, oh wow, this stuff really is real? Meanwhile, we got John Edwards and Teresa Caputo giving the life history of the people that they're giving the talks to. And I'm supposed to compare it to that and say, wow, that's really, really cool. I mean, come on. This is crazy. What the heck? This is like, you know, this is what I would have expected 40 years ago.
Right.
Not now.
Right. Yeah.
So it was just very disappointing. The first episode was really cool. First episode was great. That was one where they basically took you through a number of people. I told you the one about the doctor who had near-death experiences, and it really, you know, visibly affected them emotionally. They're, according to their report, millions of people have had those. I didn't realize the numbers were that large. I'd like to see more about that. That was a pretty interesting piece of information. And a lot of it was about people who have had these experiences. And they're finding that the experiences and what they learned from them are so vastly different from what they were taught in their Christian churches and so forth. And they're now having to deal with the fact that their beliefs have shifted entirely while their friends and family's beliefs have not shifted. And okay, that becomes an interesting conversation, please. That's a really interesting point, because I can see that is a difficult thing. If you've had this huge, huge shift, you probably have run into that, I would imagine.
Well, similar. And then I've also had similar experience. I haven't had a near-death experience, Walt.
Mm-hmm.
But when you start experiencing what, you know, in a sense, the afterlife through doing readings,
mm-hmm.
you know, as a medium, or, you know, at least for me, because I can only speak from my experience, you know, traditional teachings and, you know. But I was like, how can that be truth if what I'm experiencing and I'm getting time and time again in these readings are very similar, and some are, you know, or different, but yet the client can validate what I'm bringing forward. How can that be truth if what I'm being told as a child or, you know, young adult, whatever, completely is in, you know, direct conflict with that? How,
right.
you know, and so that's where I found those two worlds collided, and where it created a, if you will, a rip in the, you know, the fabric of time for me. And I was really in a quandary of going, whoa, like, and so sure. I really had to start doing like, now what, I don't even know what truth is anymore. And okay, so what feels, you know, what feels right? And I was like, so, you know, I was always going with the aspect of things that are on high vibration or things that are positive in nature instead of always hellfire and damnation, and started walking towards what I understood was what I was getting from spirit, right? And and so I chose to believe in that aspect. Now, I will say that, you know, there's aspects of modern religion that, you know, I still believe in, but it's vastly different than what is taught or is what is even written. And it's just because, you know, it's Dean's personal belief that really, you know, the Bible or whatever book you're reading, doesn't matter if it's a Bible or not, is man's interpretation of what went down or what was told. Mm-hmm. And it was like, if I told you a story about my buddy and I want you to write it down, you're going to all of a sudden interpret that in a way. And then somebody's going to go, no.
That's not what happened.
The way, because I told you the way that I interpret it. And you, you know, so it's going to, you know, take on a different connotation. And of course, we understand that there's a lot of lore. There's a lot of legend. There's a lot of things that are not maybe in direct alignment or, you know, exactly right. And then, of course, we always understand that, you know, when it comes to religion, if we're talking about real, even spirituality, when it comes to things that people talk about, people put it in their own perspective and they put their own spin on it. So even if you're going to church, if you're traditional religion, whatever, you know, different pastors, ministers, maybe even spiritual folks, they take their own perspective and put it, their interpretation of what is written or what, you know, what others have shared, and because they're putting it in their own personal perspective, whether they believe it or not. And, you know, I don't know. It's interesting. So I try to take everything with a grain of salt and go, you know, try to filter it and go, is what feels right or what feels to be truth to me? Not, you know, not, you know, to question everything.
And that's an emotional big deal.
That's really what comes through
very strongly in that first episode, that the fact that people are really strainingly upset about the fact that they are getting information through these kinds of experiences that is completely at odds with what they were taught in Sunday school and what their friends believe and what their pastor believes and what their parents believe and their siblings and their wives and husbands. And I mean, it just knocks them for a loop. One of the really interesting responses that we saw on camera in that first episode was where there was a woman who basically was convinced that she was getting signs in advance that she was going to die in childbirth with the couple's second child.
Oh, wow.
And the husband is basically of a scientific mindset. I don't remember exactly what he does, but it was science related in some way, and had dismissed it and basically say, oh, well, you know, this is like, you know, just fears about childbirth and so forth. At one point he was away in Europe, I think it was London, perhaps, on business. And she basically goes into labor, but it wasn't really going into labor. It was, there was a condition involved, and I can't remember what the condition is, but it's one where if things go horribly wrong, you can start bleeding to death instantly. And that's what happened to her. And she ended up driving herself to the hospital. I guess they had a nanny, and I guess the nanny wanted to drive her. She says, no, you don't have to drive me. I keep foreseeing my death. It's not on the way to the hospital, so I'm going to be okay. So she drives herself to the hospital. She gets there, goes into surgery. They deliver the child by cesarean section, and she dies on the table.
Oh, wow.
And her doctor, her pediatrician, who was there, actually at OBGYN, who was there, had been told about it, didn't really believe it, was, you know, wanted to be a sympathetic bedside yep. manner doctor. So she was giving that kind of support. But then there it happens on the table, and she basically covers herself with her arms and says, "This can't be happening." Just in total shock. And then they go through all the procedures of trying to revive her. And I guess 27 or 37 seconds later, after she's declared dead, they revive her.
Wow.
And then they interview later, and they find out from her that she's able to reproduce all the conversations that were supposedly unavailable to her because she was under anesthetic and then died. And she's able to reproduce all those conversations word for word. And the doctor is just floored. They're like, how could that possibly be? But the best part, I said there was an emotional scene that was set here. The best part was when afterward, the wife is describing this, her husband is sitting next to her, and her husband is saying, "I still don't totally believe in these things. I don't believe in all of this spiritual stuff and so forth, but I'm forced to accept that my wife had a very, very real experience that doesn't fit what I understand. And I'm enough of a scientist to know that when I get new data, I'm curious to know what that new data means." So he was expressing an openness
right,
to
right.
it. And his wife said something along the lines of, "You know, well, what I really wanted was for the one man I trusted and believed in and loved the most in the whole wide world to believe in me." And he comes back with this comment that doesn't affirm her, but basically says, "I probably should have listened." And over on the side, she's rolling her eyes up and throwing her hands like, "Yeah, of course. Why weren't you paying attention to me when I was telling you this stuff?" You know, that's a very compelling scene. The emotion is just coming through so clearly. The message is quite different from what we're used to seeing on television. And it just grabs you by the throat when you're watching it.
You know, it was interesting. One time I was having a conversation with somebody, Walt, about, you know, if, about abilities, right? And mm-hmm. somebody asked me, saying, "Dean, I don't have abilities like you do." And I said, "Well, whether you believe it or not, yes, you do. I believe that we all have these abilities, and whether we have premonitions or mediums, all this stuff, right, is all available to us." And so they came back with the saying, "Well, if everybody has these abilities, why aren't we aware of them? You know, why is it like we're asleep in a sense for the majority of folks?" I understand
right.
a lot of people that are very aware of it from a very early age. And I said, I think it's pretty simple, because I don't think that the average person mind at least in parts of their lives, their mind can't either A, fathom it, or B, handle it. Because if everybody was all of a sudden awake, in a sense, just like that, and was aware of all this stuff, like, "Hey, you're going to die. I'm going to die on the operating room table. I'm going to get a car accident." I mean, you would freak out. Like, who wants to know all that stuff? Some people have a hard enough time getting dressed in the morning, to be quite honest. I'm there personally myself sometimes, right? And, you know, but the thing is understand that, you know, with these abilities come the, in a sense, I don't want to call them a burden, but there is an aspect of saying, be careful what you wish for, because you're going to know some things that you probably don't want to know, but it's just information. And so I don't think for a lot of folks, number one, they couldn't handle it. But you know, my other, you know, part of me too is, you know, I always think about these things in a deeper aspect and going, if somebody knew, like had, you know, all of a sudden instant knowledge, premonition, whatever it might be, and all of a sudden was awake and could commune with the deceased, whatever their abilities were, would it be, you know, would it be, like manipulating, or would it change the divine outcome that's supposed to be, like, you know, they're whether you believe in karma or their divine aspect of, you know, what they're put here on earth to do. And if all of a sudden, and I understand that we all have free will, right? But at the same time, does that play an aspect of our role here? And some people, like, you know, almost like somebody up in heaven, if you will, just kind of a visualization, touching random people saying, you're awake, you're awake, you're awake. No, not you. Baron to the back of the line. Bill, get the hell out of here. Right? So it's like going through the crowd and like eeny, meeny, miny, mo, and awakening just enough people to help the masses or help those. But at the same time, not everybody is to that aspect. Is that, you know, does that play a, you know, would it change the, and I think it would to a degree. Like if we were all so enlightened, all of a sudden, you know, how would that change things? It's like we could take it a step further and say all of a sudden if if there was evidence today that came out that every single living human on earth could not, deny the presence of aliens, what do you think would happen? I think most people would be like freaking out, right? And, you know, other
people.
I don't
know about that. I'm not sure.
I think so. I think the majority.
Here's why I don't think so. I get what you're saying, but let me give you an alternative idea of looking at it.
Yeah.
The people who were on this program were basically afraid of, they were in distress because they were experiencing something that their friends and families and influential people in their lives didn't experience. And so theirs was the only viewpoint that had changed.
Right.
And it was the fact that theirs was the only one that had changed that was distressing. But if everybody's is shifting at the same moment, where's the distress? Mm. See, I don't think it'd be the same level of distress because everybody's experiencing is like, well, did you experience that? Yeah, I saw that too. Well, that was pretty weird. It becomes a conversation rather than, oh my God, I'm so different from everybody else.
Right. Right. Well,
I'm thinking it becomes an easier kind of scenario in that way.
It could be. It could be. I think there would be the pockets though of people that react out of fear.
And, oh, I think so.
And that's the piece, I guess, that I'm talking about, how to process the information and what you're getting. But I think we're actually getting off topic, but going back to the aspect of like, you know, just having these experiences. But I guess what I was going to is just sharing that, you know, it's, everybody's different, I guess, how you process things and you're, mm-hmm. but you're exactly right is a lot of times when you're going through these changes. And again, I can't speak to near death experience, but a lot of times you feel like you're the only one.
Yeah. That's where it gets lonely.
And when you're still in the quote unquote closet and you haven't come out yet. You know, it's like, ooh, I don't want to be that guy or that gal.
Right.
And then once you do though, other people are like, oh, you know, I've been on my spiritual journey. Oh my God. Or people that are so supportive, you know, it's like, oh, it's 2020. Big deal, right? You know, somebody, hey, you know, join the club or big deal, you know, or they're like, big deal, get on with your life. You know, it's like, oh my God, I thought it was such a big deal over it. So I don't know.
It's definitely a timely conversation because apparently it is happening with so many people. And that was the big reveal for me where that first episode was concerned. The fact that if it is a fact, then I kind of trust it because the fact came from a self-professed scientist who's been studying this stuff. Literally, there are millions of people who've had these near-death experiences according to him. Wow. Millions. I thought it was like in the tens. You know, so millions. That's an eye-opener for me. Like, okay.
Well,
okay,
I know that there's a lot of scientific journals and a lot of thesis written on not only near-death experience, but like the weight of the soul, like real scientific, like people really trying to understand, like, you know, what really does happen to that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, can we quantify saying, I get it, what mediums say and all that great. So that's great. But is there something quantifiable scientifically? And I think science is getting there. You know, they're compiling these stories and saying there's something here. Mm-hmm. You know, either millions of people are pretty good liars or somebody, you know, somebody's, you know, there's got to be a thread of truth in there somewhere, right? So it's like, okay, So
it's fascinating too how similar the stories are. I mean, there are differences, there are variances, sure. But I talked to a number of people who are psychic or mediums like yourself or have various abilities to, you know, do. I mean, Amy and Louie, who both do the Monday show, they like to talk about their out of body experiences. I've never had an out of body experience in my life. I know some of our listeners have. They've talked about it, and you know, so there's an example of it. There are lots of these different kinds of experiences, and they all kind of describe the same general format, or not so much format, but like the same general description of the other side, if you want to call it that. You know, sure. There's always the story about how there is the loved one who's there to wait for you. And then there's, you know, there's the tunnel, and then there's, you know, all these different elements that keep showing up over and over and over again in the various stories that get told. And in fact, the researcher said the same thing. He kept hearing all these different stories about, and they were very different. There were lots of differences in them, but they all had certain commonalities to them. And one of those commonalities was that it basically left people feeling at peace in ways that other things didn't make them feel at peace. There were very definite similarities going on. When I hear about those similarities and yet I hear that there are differences as well, I think to myself, that sounds real to me. Because you're going to have differences. There are different people involved. So there are going to be different experiences. But if they're all relatively in the same kind of place, they're going to be commonalities. And we get both. And that makes it, that actually makes it believable for me.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah, definitely interesting stuff. I love chatting about that stuff because, you know, it's, you can get really deep down the rabbit hole and stuff like kidding. That. And it's fun talking about it because not only does it expand your awareness and it kind of challenges you to look at things from different angles, mm-hmm. whether you agree with it or not, and just really talk about it. I just find it really fascinating. And, so yeah, I'll have to check out this docu-series.
Yeah. Yeah, tell us what you think about it. Yeah, I think you'll especially like that first episode, but you got to tell me what you think about the mediumship episodes.
You know, actually, I had somebody on my military medium page on Facebook actually asked me if I have watched that series. And I.
Oh, really? Okay.
And so now I'm going to have to, it's going to be the little push maybe.
There you go.
And you need to watch it maybe. So.
Well, I tell you, you'll like the first episode. I'm sure of that. It's very enjoyable. But you'll have to report back.
Popcorn.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, sit back. It'll be good.
Yeah, well, perfect.
I also wanted to bring in the email that Barbie sent us.
Oh, yeah.
Because you sat in on Friday for Linda, and she sent us a really nice email talking about our discussion, giving some of her feedback on it. So anyway, she writes and says, spells it as fun, phenomenal Friday episode. Although Linda was missed, you and Dean hit on bazinga perfection. I don't even know what bazinga means, but it sounds cool. Yeah. She says, when I surrendered the idea that it was okay that I wasn't perfect and accepted this is a journey, I started to trust in my worthiness. Once I learned no one was perfect, and if people laughed at me or made fun of me for mistakes that were really just showing their insecurity or displaying behavior they received at one point, well, that's what 16 to 26-year-olds need to understand to reduce anxiety, stress, and ultimately suicide. Once I felt worthy to participate in life and learned to laugh with others while I fumbled, I relaxed, stopped trying to prove my worthiness, and then I got on with self-love and accepting love, not just superficial relationships. I later realized, she says, everyone at that age is trying to portray the part of an adult without genuinely knowing how, because they have not lived through life lessons yet. Instead of accepting there is still so much to learn, we cover up our insecurities and they come out sideways. Through attitude, obnoxious behavior, hurtful words, then usually shame, guilt, etc. Whereas teaching people that they don't have to be perfect at 18, although suddenly an adult, we celebrate 16th birthdays, bar mitzvahs, driver's licenses, graduation, but the work and lessons are in the daily grind, losses on the sports field, the subpar grades or performances, the conversations at the dinner table when kids are 5, 6, 7, 8 and growing up. Some of us were sheltered by those. And then suddenly thrusted into the world to learn how to juggle all that with added other pressures. Many remain immature in adult bodies or claim victimhood because they didn't learn the lesson to take responsibility for their life and that they can shift into creating a life of their dreams. So you're onto something with this self-love path. Keep teaching it. So,
wow. What a powerful, message there. Thank you, Barbie. That was awesome.
Yeah.
That's great. I guess validation that, you know, talking about that, just solidifying the thread that we were talking about, right? And so, yeah, beautiful, beautifully said.
It's nice to know how closely our listeners listen to what we talk about. Right? I mean, that's a pretty detailed email right there.
Right. Well, and obviously it touched Barbie very emotionally, very deeply, right? So that's it's beautiful that...
We get a lot of those too. That's what's so cool. Our listeners write detailed emails, detailed messages. It reinforces not only are they listening closely, they're being affected and it's influencing their thinking and they're coming back with some ideas of their own, which is even more cool.
That's awesome. Just adds a collective of helping others. I love it. I love it.
That's right. Yeah. And by the way, I want to keep encouraging everybody else. Especially if you haven't done it, use the form in the LOA Today app. And that's what it's for. It's called the Ask a Question form, but really it's for any kind of communication. And send in a communication about, what you're hearing us talk about, especially if there's something that kind of touches you and you say, wow, I really want to respond to that. Or if you just want to raise a question, like if you want to have Dean give you a reading, call in, write in about that too. Or just maybe a general question for conversation that you want us to address. That's all valid, but take advantage of it because we love hearing from you and we love the detail that you go into when you write your stuff. I guess I'm trying to empower those who have felt like, they're lurking and like, oh, I don't know if I really dare send something in. Send it in. Send it in. It's so much better when you do. It's so much more fun.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Look at the attention that the people who have sent in are getting. You get the same attention, right?
Right. Absolutely.
And that's part of what we were talking about earlier, I think. We've been talking quite a bit about the impact that all of this stuff has on a broader society that doesn't have anywhere near the level of attention to it that we've given. So they don't have the experience with it. They don't have the, they haven't given it the kind of thought we've given to it and so forth. And I guess in that sense, I can kind of excuse the latter parts of the Netflix series because they're addressing the fact that people haven't really looked at this stuff for the most part.
Sure, sure.
Putting aside that, Teresa Caputo doesn't exist, put that part aside, right?
Yeah.
Saw that show.
Only been on TV for about 10 years, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, nothing there.
Right.
Nothing to see. But no, seriously, the fact that it is seeping into the population at large and the population, I think the coolest part is the population are largely accepting. I mean, yes, that first episode of the Surviving Death series did focus a lot of attention, quite rightly, on people who are feeling the distress involved in experiencing these things at odds with what they were taught and what their friends believe and so forth. And I get that. That's really, really important. But also interesting to note that most of that is just expression of fears. It's really what's going on inside the person. This is them being very concerned that they're not going to be accepted for this. And yet what I see more often than not, now I have to admit, I'm not totally exposed to what we might call the red state side of things. I used to be, and I'm not so much anymore. So there may be some more resistance there because you tend to find more of the, the hell and damn fire type of thought processes there. Maybe there is a lot more resistance there than I'm aware of. But what I continuously see is people, they don't necessarily understand. Maybe they don't even believe, but they're accepting. Okay. Yeah. I don't really believe in that, but I accept that you had that experience. I don't even know what it means, but okay. I believe you. That's quite a different experience from, oh, you are teaching, you are the voice of a sorcerer, you are violating the Bible and all that kind. That's an entirely different kind of reaction, I'm just glad to see that there's so much of that more accepting kind of stuff going on.
Right. No, absolutely. I think that it's the narrative is changing and so is the climate, and that's a great thing to see.
Yeah.
So it's good stuff.
When you get somebody who comes to you, I guess I'm kind of curious. Do you get people who express fears and concerns along these lines when they're consulting with you?
I have, and I just tell them to go to hell, Walt. I just I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I don't. I have, and sometimes there was and usually what it was is there was a lot of concerns over a lot of different stuff. One was, hey, how do you know what you're connecting to? How do you know that it is an evil? Is my reading confidential? You know, so these are things that kind of, I give a preliminary, like, you know, hey, your reading's confidential today. You know, also, you know, I'm only connecting to divine, you know, spirits. I'm not going to, you know, so trying to ease some people's fears. But as far as being skeptical, absolutely. You know, I get people that come in and they're like,
And arms folded.
You can just feel the wall. Like,
yeah,
I'm thinking, why are you even here? But they're there for a reason. And saying, and so I try, you know, I try my best. Sometimes there's nothing you're going to do because they're almost borderline cynic.
Yeah.
Of saying, if you don't deliver the reading in the box that they're carrying inside of them, you're missing, you know, you're not going to, you know, it's not going to work. And so, you know, I don't want to say I try to disarm them in a sense, but at the same time is just, you know, when I approach readings, just approach them all the same, regardless of where people are. You know, I just, you know, try to, I guess connect with them where they're at. But you know, yeah, I get some people that are very guarded, very, you know, I'm very skeptical, or I'm, you know, I don't believe in this or whatever the case is. And again, you know, I'm certainly, I don't say, well, I'm not here to, try to make you a believer and then make them, you know, like, you need to believe. I don't do that. And there's been a lot of times where, you know, be like, well, you know, whether you believe or not, that's up to you. That's not my job to do that. And it's, that lies, you know, it starts and ends with you. It's nobody else's.
The honest way to do it. Yeah.
And you're never going to change my, what I've found is if somebody's a cynic, you're never going to change their point of view or their belief anyways, until they have their own experience. It has to be something, you know, you talk about, you know, some of these folks with near-death experiences, like that doctor, right? And sometimes you have to, in order to really be a big believer or understand it intimately, you have to have your own experience of some sort.
Yeah.
And so then when, once that happens, then you're like, holy crap, this was my experience, right? And so then, you know, kind of like when my grandmother came in and, you know, touched me and it, you know, for me, I needed something like that at that time in my life. Other people need less. Other people, you know, they need more, you know, it's so, but,
And I always wondered for myself what it would take, right? Cause my sister presented this kind of stuff to me long before I got into law of attraction.
Sure.
And I dismissed it. I was hopefully polite about it, but I was dismissive. And I remember at the time, if I were to ever believe in anything like this, I wonder what it would take. Well, it turned out it took one word. That's all it took. And that one word came out of my sister's mouth in a way that she could not have predicted that it was going to affect me, because it was right after my father died in 2008, March 2008. And a few days afterward, my sister lived in the general region where my parents lived. I lived quite a bit north of there. And a few days afterward, she and my mom went to church together. And while she was in church, she got this splitting headache. She had been through enough spiritual classes to recognize from her teaching that this may have been a connection that she was getting from the other side, and immediately thought of my dad. And so in her mind said, "Dad, is that you?" And immediately got back a yes. And being my sister, the first thing she asked my dad is, "What's it like on the other side?" And the answer she gets back is festive. And that's the word that convinced me. Because I have never in my life heard my sister utter the word festive, but my dad would have said that word a lot.
Interesting.
And so when she said that, I knew she was telling me the truth. Huh. I knew this wasn't something she was making up. This was something she had genuinely gotten from my dad. And then I got confirmation about a month and a half later when I had a dreaming experience of meeting up with my dad. Very, very real experience, more real than any dream I'd ever had. And that just kind of sealed the deal for me. But it was that one word that just kind of flipped the switch for me. And I thought I would take a lot more convincing than that, to be perfectly honest. I thought I'd have to have like lots of really strong experiences. No, just one word. I didn't even have the experience directly. It was relayed to me. I didn't experience hearing that. She got it. You know, she was just telling me about it and it was enough. I'm like, okay. Well,
Walt, I bet your dad's sitting there right now and going, little, you know how much energy was behind that one word? Do you realize? Do you realize? You know, it's like, you know, interesting because in our mind, we think it needs to be so, you know, it needs to be big or it needs to be loud or, and how much energy can be behind one, I guess, in our aspect of understanding word or act or something that touches almost like you think about it. And I know this might be a little weird, but I think about this is, the human reproduction system, right?
Okay.
Is you have one small egg, right? Female's egg.
Mm-hmm.
You have, what was it? Millions of sperm that try to fertilize the egg.
Right.
And it just takes one that goes to the center of it.
Yeah.
And these are, you know, they have to look through a microscope, right?
Right.
And, you know, I just think about that, how powerful that is, but at a microorganism level.
Right, right.
And that word, you know, was the pinprick that goes directly to your heart. And
that's
within
true.
A second, you knew, like,
instantly.
No question.
Yeah.
You knew. And it's like, without a doubt. And, you know, it's interesting because there are things that every day, all the time, we're getting, but they're bouncing off because they're not hitting us in the way that we need it.
Right.
Or whatever, wherever our mind is, or our emotional state, our physical state. And all of a sudden that one little, you know, that fertilizes that egg, if you will, or that gets right to our heart and going, oh my God. You know,
it's
that makes
quite true.
So it's emotional true. Or so like, oh, you know, so yeah, it just think how much energy is behind that little dropper. And it's just like, whoa, you know, mind blown.
It's a great point. And the fact is that when we are experiencing something like that for the first time and we're making that shift. From that point on, it's like we start becoming aware of those things that you pointed out were kind of bouncing off of us before.
Right.
And now they're no longer bouncing off of us. And I can think of another example with my father that showed up a few years later. We were living about 2.5 hours north of where my parents lived. They lived in Lynchburg, Virginia. We were in Warrenton, Virginia, about 2.5 hours north of there. And I was out mowing the lawn one day. We had one of these riding mowers. And I get to one place on the yard and there's a mourning dove sitting on one of these lawn pavings, you know, for footsteps, sitting on the lawn paving, literally about 6 feet away from this mower. Now, I don't know if you've ever ridden a riding mower. They're loud. They're really, really loud.
Wow.
They vibrate. They shake. They're making a racket. And that bird's sitting there looking at me like it's nothing. And I'm thinking, what on earth is that all about? And as soon as I asked the question, snap came into my mind, my dad. And the reason that it came in as my dad was the one who was into mowing the lawn. Now, if I had tried to make that connection before I'd had the festive experience, I would have instantly dismissed it as that's not even connect. That doesn't even make sense.
Right.
But afterward, for some reason, that now makes sense.
Right.
Why is it that it didn't make sense before and it makes sense now? And as I look at it rationally, I can't say that it makes sense. But emotionally, it just clicks. It's like, well, yeah, that's what it is. And it's a strong level of belief. Very, very strong.
Absolutely.
I don't quite get why that happens, but I know now that it definitely happens, that it's almost like reason gets pushed aside because the experience is such a strong experience that we just say, yes, I'm having that. I feel it right now. I'm experiencing it, and there's no doubt in my mind that I'm experiencing it. And it just kind of overrides the logic of it.
Yeah. Well, and when, like you said, like it's like your whole body knows this. It's just a knowing. And there, like you said, there's no doubt whatsoever in any of your bones.
That's right.
Like, that's truth. Like you said, there was no maybe. It's just like, boom.
Nope.
And it's like, where does that come from? And, you know, and of course we know that answer, but when you're in that state of like unfolding that like quandary, it's just the instant knowing that claircognizance, right? The clear knowing. And just it's so fascinating to me how it can just instant. It's just like, hey, you know, hey, Walt, hi, I just want to say hi.
Right.
And it's just, all of a sudden we know. And, you know, just like you said, it defies logic of, or what we understand logic to be.
Right.
Because we have set parameters of what is logical and what is not.
Exactly. Yeah.
And when we take away those parameters, when we take away the confines of what whatever it's supposed to look like, that's when the cool stuff happens. That's when, you know, we start.
And of course, the way it feels is, it feels like not that we took them away, but they were taken away from us in a sense. It feels like they just kind of disappeared on their own. Like, whoa, where'd they go?
You're right. Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, it was all a farce anyway. So don't worry about them. You don't need those. You know,
no.
It's like having extra parts, right? After you put together some, you don't need them. You just put them away. You know, so
who needs an engine? That's not important.
It's like, you must be a pretty good mechanic. You got extra parts left over.
That's right. Yeah. Very, very, economical there. You just saved on some parts. That's good.
You know, I had a similar experience as well when my dad passed last year, and I knew that we all knew, or well, especially I knew that he was passing. And, one of the things that I have went to my hometown, which is about 4.5-5 hours from where I live now. And I had went previously in the summer. My dad had a close call with a heart attack, and I went to stay with my mom for a while. And one of the things that I passed, and this is pertinent to the story, was like a power glider. You know, those hang gliders with the airplane on the back. And this is northern Minnesota. This is not California. This is not Oregon. So, and I was like, boy, that thing. And I actually stopped on my way there and I took a picture of it and I thought, God, and it looked like a death machine. It just a ratty, just an old circus looking, but it was cool. Right. Mm-hmm. And of course, jokingly text my wife, hey, can I buy it? You know, and all that.
Yeah, she loved that, I'm sure.
Right. So, and of course, I went home and spent time with my mom. My dad pulled through. I leave. And then the next time I came back was right like, well, actually the day that I drove, the next time that I came back was when my dad passed. Mm-hmm. And actually we knew that dad was kind of, you know, hours before passing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I could feel it. And so I was like, and I was driving, and as I got closer to my hometown, my dad always called me Charlie Brown, and he was like, hey, Charlie Brown. And I was like, hey, what, and I'm driving, you know, I'm doing like 65, 70. And I was like, what are you doing? And he was like, I'm going flying. And I was like, what? And he was like, I'm going flying with my brother. And I was like, oh shit, like that. And I was like, I get it. What you're telling me, you're getting ready to transition. Like you're
right.
You know, his body was already basically had fallen into a little coma, if you will. But I was like, brother, like I never knew I had an uncle, right?
Oh, wow.
On my dad's side. Okay. And I was like, that didn't make sense. And of course, you know, I kind of didn't really think about it. And when I got, and what I saw in my mind was my dad taking that damn glider and flying. Mm. Well, as I got up, and I kid you not, as I got up to the corner where it was gone. And I actually rolled down the window. I expected to see it flying because I was like, who the hell would buy it? Like, it was just a ratty, like, you know. And I got home, and of course, it wasn't 4 hours, and Dad passed away. And I was like, so then, of course, after, you know, things settled down a little bit later in the evening, I was telling my sisters and my mom, I said, you're not going to believe this, but I want to tell you about the story while I was driving here. And Dad came and talked to me, and I said, which was really weird. He said he was going flying with his brother. I said, I don't understand that. My mom goes, oh my God. She goes, you know, Grandma McMurray, before my dad was born, had a child, and it was stillborn.
Oh my.
And I was like, really? And I said, I never knew that. And she said, well, it's not something you talk about. And of course, you know, my grandfather and grandmother wasn't something that he chatted about a lot. Anyway, it wasn't a really happy childhood because my grandmother died at a younger age from breast cancer. And then my grandfather committed suicide because of her dying. So then as a teenager, my dad had to go live with his cousins. And, so he had a tougher, you know, time in his childhood growing up. So long story short, it was interesting. So, and then, after my family, my wife and my kids came up for the funeral, and they said, well, let's go to dinner. And of course, it's in northern Minnesota, and this was in the July timeframe. And we all went out to dinner, and we're sitting by the dock, and sure enough, I have my drink sitting there, and a dragonfly shows up right on the drink.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, look at that. And I almost touched it. Like, you dragonflies, you know, normally take off. And this one was just sitting there for the longest time. And I was like, so how you doing? You know, I started,
right.
You know, me, I start talking like, hey, how you doing? You know, and I always knew that, you know, like, you know, by this time I'm already well, but it, you know, it's, and I was like, that's really cool. So, you know, and of course the kids are there and, you know, everybody's more aware of that kind of stuff. But yeah, so I just wanted to share, I guess, my personal story with that. And I think
that's pretty cool.
I think most the listeners that are, you know, of the LOA Today show, could probably, and maybe they want to share some of their cool stories.
Yeah, by all means.
Maybe if you would like to share your story, you know, do so on that little message window and share about, you know, how you received this, a sign from a loved one in spirit where you instantly knew who it was, or maybe were validated later, but that would really be really cool to hear as well. And, I always love saying, you know, it bears to be repeated, but you know, love never dies. And it,
right.
I love that when it comes, it's like validation from left field, right? And it's just like, wow, it gives me goosebumps every time. You know, it's like, that stuff is so cool because it's this validation of those on the other side that are, you know, still there.
Very cool. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, definitely anybody who's interested in sharing a manifestation story of that kind where you got some sort of connection, by all means, use the app to send it in, and we'll include it in next week's conversation. But this is great. Thanks for sharing that last story too, Dean. That was really cool. Those are good to hear. So thank you very much. Thank you to our listeners, and thank you to everybody for tuning in. We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.